5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning at WorkInSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. We've had a pretty crazy month. We decided to double up our podcast guests and have been really trying to crush January 2020. But we're going to start getting back into our regular routine this week. Mondays will go back to being a fan question, a shorter episode in the 10 to 15 minute range. Wednesdays will be our longer form interview with an industry expert. This month we did Mondays and Wednesdays industry experts, and I'm telling you, go back and listen to the content if you haven't yet. Hannah Huseman, mental skills coach of the Philadelphia Phillies, Ishvin Anand, CEO of Open Sponsorship, Sloan Kelly, managing editor of the USTA, managing director of content and creative services for the USTA, Tim Duncan, who's the athletic director of the University of New Orleans, Celia Busa, who is the director of ESPN Next, and Sam Ray, who's the manager of amateur scouting for the San Diego Padres, all in the last couple of weeks. Great interviews, lots of detail. I'm so glad that I didn't forget any of them as I was just listing that off the top of my head. And then this week, we're going to have on Philadelphia Eagles Director of Production, Stacy Kelleher. Stacy worked for a long time at Ohio State and just came to the Eagles a year ago. Really great interview. Make sure to check that out on Wednesday. Stacy has some really great insight into cover letters and what she likes to see in them. Also, when she was at Ohio State, she had, you know, 50 or 60 interns or volunteers who were working on their productions. And she has a lot of advice for how people can stand out in that scenario, how to find opportunities, and how to really nail them. So really good stuff in there. So before we get into our Monday fan question, real talk for a second. Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and seven others died in a helicopter crash in Calabasas, California yesterday. And if you are listening to this episode 6 months from now, you'll likely remember where you were when you heard this news. We all know it's tragic. We all hope the family can find peace in this awful time, and we all have memories of Kobe from afar. But I would ask of you to listen more than you speak in times like these. Listen to those who knew him, competed against him, knew his family, spent time with his daughter. That is how you can respect his legacy. By listening to those who knew the real man off screen. This is not a time for your hot take, or to go live and discuss the hashtag Mamba mentality, or to share the seven tips you learned from watching Kobe play ball. The thousands of people that are doing this right now will tell you it's their way of paying tribute, a way to honor those who have passed. But it is not. It is people leveraging a tragedy to help build their personal brand. And to me, that is gross. I did this once, so I'm speaking not from a view of perfection, but rather one of reflection. I wrote a story after ESPN anchor Stuart Scott passed away from cancer. I gave a behind-the-scenes look at how the sports media handles death, especially in one, when it's one of their own. It was a really good article. There was lots of insight, a viewpoint not many see. And I'll be honest, I kind of hated myself after I published it. Just listen. This sort of thing doesn't have to be about you. All right, let's transition. Let's have a different conversation right now, one that will help you advance in your sports career, because that's the point of all this, right? That's why we're here. So I'm going to get off my soapbox for a second and get to Jonathan from California. Hi, Brian. You recently spoke in my college classroom. Hey, that's cool. And I have to tell you, when we have guest speakers, most of the time, everyone kind of tunes out. But after the class, when you were the speaker, we were all talking about the info you shared. You resonated. My question is a simple one. As part of our college curriculum, we have to do a lot of presentations in front of the class. I was wondering if you may be able to give some tips to those of us who are in this situation and public speaking isn't our norm. Jonathan, great question. I picked your question for many reasons. One, It is a topic we haven't talked about before. And two, you said really nice things about me, which is always a way to get your question asked. I'm not above flattery. In all seriousness, public speaking and presenting is a huge part of the sports industry, not just in your college classroom. If you work in sales, you'll present concepts and ideas to businesses and groups. If you work in marketing, you'll present to athletes, executive staffs, and other stakeholders. Even if you work in scouting, you'll present to the director of scouting, advocating for a player. Everyone needs to improve at this. So no matter what your role is, you will present in front of a group during your career. And the more confident and charismatic you can be in these environments, the better. So I'll share some of my tips. And trust me, I've learned this by doing. No one ever really taught me or trained me. I just kind of learned from my own mistakes. And this is how I would characterize what I try to accomplish. Tip number one, identify your audience beforehand. What is their reason for being here? What's their motivation, right? When I'm speaking to a college class, I know that they are forced to be here. I know that they would probably rather be looking at their phone or flirting with the guy or girl in the next row over. In this instance, by knowing my audience, I know that I have to be entertaining, not just informative. In the first 5 minutes, I have to give the audience something that makes them think, okay, this is interesting, or else I've lost them, right? In that first 5 minutes, I gotta hit some button with them. I know I also need to change the tone of my voice often. We've all had a professor who had a monotone voice, and it lulled you to sleep. I know in this instance, I have to get excited. I have to sometimes get serious. I have to make a strong point. And I kind of have to overact a little bit. In a presentation where the audience needs convincing of your value, tone and excitement and being bold become very important. You must capture them early and then hold them with changes in tone and information and close strong. But we'll get into some of that stuff. But let's look at an entirely different set of circumstances. If I was presenting to a group of executives who wants to be there, expects me to deliver information they need to succeed in their job, my style is completely different. I'm serious, informative, confident, and rarely feel the need to put on a performance. In this instance, the most important part of the presentation is my confidence. If I believe what I'm saying, they will too. So start by identifying your audience and their motivation for being there. It'll help you define your role in this experience. Now, tip number two goes a little bit deeper. You have to know your main stakeholder. In every room, there is one person that is the most important. While you need to know the motivation of the entire room if you hope to capture their interest, you also need to know who the most important person is in the room and what they want. They supersede everything else. So now you're presenting to a local business why they should buy a premium suite, or you are presenting to a group trying to convince them to sponsor the new scoreboard on campus, or you're presenting your social media strategy to the executive staff, whatever. A lot of different instances you could be presenting, or you're presenting in the classroom. In all of these scenarios, there may be 10 people in the room, but there is one major decision maker. You need to know who that person is, and you need to make sure that person knows that you know they're a big deal. Okay, that sounded confusing, but let me reiterate. You need to make sure that person feels special, right? You need to make sure that you're drawing more attention to them. And here's how you do it. You have to learn what you can about them in advance. Their style, their persona. Are they serious? Are they fun? Do they love the community? Have they donated in the past? Do they have a love of sports? Are they shrewd business people who just like a deal? Know who they are and more about their background. And then when you are speaking, make sure your eyes are in their direction more than everyone else's. So we'll get to that in a second, more detail on that. But make sure as you're kind of scanning the room and you're trying to make eye contact with everybody, you land in their area more often than not. Don't fall for the trick where the whoever is sitting at the head of the table is the most important person in the room. They may be, but they also may not be. Do your research before you enter the room so you know who they are before they sit down. Don't try to make an assumption based on where they sit. Number three, don't memorize, know your materials. There's a subtle distinction here. You have to know your material so well, you can just inherently speak about it. If you memorize a script, you will fail. Seriously, I've seen this happen so many times. Someone memorizes, they get nervous, they miss a word, they stumble over a sentence, and then it's a sweaty, uncomfortable nightmare. When I speak, I have a rough outline of what I want to talk about, usually just mentally, but I know my material so well that every time comes out naturally. When you know your material, you speak with authenticity. When you memorize, you seem robotic and less connected to the materials. I know my expertise so well that when someone throws a question at me, I can handle it in the moment. If I memorize an exacting script, I wouldn't be able to handle a question as I'm going, or somebody raising their hand or making a distraction or something else happening in the room. It would always throw me off. By knowing your materials really well, you provide yourself flexibility and agility in the moments. True story. About 2 years ago, I was set to speak at Arizona State University. And I thought to myself, you know, maybe I should get a little more organized in these speeches. Maybe I should write a more detailed outline, give myself more notes, a bit of a script, and stay on task. In the first 5 minutes, I felt so robotic and dependent on the script that I felt like I kept looking to it, that I was like, this is not working. I crumpled it up and just started talking from the heart. When you're comfortable with your material, you can do this. Number four, notes. Everyone's different here. I don't personally use any notes. I like every classroom talk to be unique, or any presentation I do to be from the heart. And the way I do that is by having a rough mental outline and then just watching and observing the audience. We'll talk about that in a little bit too. But if you are a note user and you are more comfortable having something in your hands or something to refer to in times of panic or disarray, keep your notes simple. You have to make your notes in a format that you can look at them quickly and get back to talking. If you have to scan, read, and find your spot, that's 5 to 10 seconds. Feels like a lifetime to your audience. If I were writing notes, I'd have 5 to 10 words total. I'd write like heat check, internship strategy, networking, cover letter, interviewing. That's it. That's enough for a 45-minute speech if you have enough knowledge of your subject. Number five, observing the audience. Watch the audience at large, but most importantly, your key stakeholder. How are they looking? If their attention is piqued, drive deeper. Get excited. If they're drifting, change topics, change tone. If you're able to walk down an aisle, do it. If you're able to draw something on the board, do it. You need to change the energy when you see the room changing for the negative. Number six, use your eyes effectively. When I speak, I try not to make direct eye contact with any individuals. I look at everyone's foreheads. Subtle shift here, but trust me, there's an awkwardness that for both of you when you lock eyes with someone and it can throw you off. I look just above the eyes at the foreheads, and that prevents anything throwing me off my cadence. Now, there is one exception. I always make some eye contact with my key stakeholder that I've identified. I know I'm going to do this in advance, so it doesn't feel awkward. It doesn't happen spontaneously. It happens prepared. I know it's happening, so it feels like I'm in control. I want them, the key stakeholder, to know I'm not thrown off by their presence, and I know they are the most important and respected in the room. This is exuding confidence, and this is what decision makers want to see. If that is your professor, make eye contact with them. Not for long, just 3 seconds or so, all within the rhythm of your speech. If you can make eye contact and keep going effortlessly, that's a pro move. And number seven, final tip, close strong. You want your lasting impression to be one of you in total control. Don't speed up. Don't try to overdo it. Just finish with great confidence and poise. Even if you are a puddle on the inside, show yourself strong and in command in the final moments, and you'll leave with a strong, lasting impression. That's it. That's how it's done. Now get out there and crush it, Jonathan. You will present information, all of you will present information throughout your career, whatever you choose to do. Everyone can improve. I try to improve in every speech. This is a good start. This is a good place for everyone to start. Thanks for listening, everyone. Remember to subscribe to the podcast and give us a great review wherever you listen. All right, everyone, get back to work.